Welcome back to Soul Back. This is the R&B podcast. Kyle here, back with Tom and Ed. We promised we'd be back, and we are. I know a lot of people are like, "Oh, are you really gonna go through 2012?" But here we are. We're gonna go through 2012, guys.
We are gonna do it because somebody has to.
Good to talk to you all again. And as you know, I had my notes for 2012 ready to go right after the last episode. I was fired up.
That was like 5 months ago.
It was July. All right.
But we're here, and even before we got on this podcast, we did our, because you know how it is, guys. Before we do the podcast, we usually go through our notes, which are like bullet form. We don't really think too much about it because we've lived through these albums. But right before we got on here, Tom and I were talking, and Ed, and we had like mixed reviews on what we thought about this year. So it'll be kind of interesting to put this all together and kind of see where we land here.
We'll go through it. I won't spoil it, but I will say, as I went through it, it was not as bad as I remember.
And I'll just point out, and my current recollection kind of aligns with what I felt at the time, a lot of the younger artists were bringing new life to the genre, which I was excited about. And it kind of masks some of the deficiencies happening, but we'll talk about it.
Oh, and there was some deficiencies for sure.
Before we get into 2012, let's have a quick food discussion. I sent you guys this video recently about French fries. We've always had conversations on who has the best French fries. A person on YouTube was comparing Five Guys French fries versus McDonald's French fries.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is when you look at it from a price point, Ed, Five Guys seems to be way more expensive.
But you get what you pay for, because Five Guys, their fries and their burgers are superior. They are greasy, and if you don't get the fries on the right day, they're soggy. They're just like wet shoelaces. But when done well, perfection. Get the Cajun.
Here's the thing about Five Guys. They hand you a bag of fries, more than you can even eat. And yes, by the time you even walk out the store with the bag, the thing is already, there's a grease hole in the bottom. Fries are falling out the bag.
Yep.
So you lose half your fries before you even leave the store.
Yes. First of all, then, you hold the bag from the bottom. You have to know this, because if you don't, they're going to bust and fall over the cement. But yes,
you got to hold the bag like you're robbing the place. I don't understand.
Yes.
I love that McDonald's little carton. It's neat. It's sturdy. It'll do you right. It won't grease up the whole life.
Grease up the whole life, which is true, but you're going to get a portion opposed to what you'll get for Five Guys. So again, you get what you pay for.
But now, can I ask you both?
Yes. No, go ahead, Tom.
I have a separate food question, though. And you can maybe both help me clarify. First, you told me about some church's chicken happening in New York City, which I had never heard of. You found out there was one actually in Midtown. Now there's something called Raising Cane's chicken fingers opening up all over. It's the rage of New York City. I also never heard of that. Can someone explain what is going on with all these chicken spots?
First of all, y'all are so late. Church's is been around as long as I've been alive. It's a chicken spot. It's fine. I think it's a little overrated. It's okay. It's fine. Mm. But Raising Cane's, I have never had. So I can't speak on Raising Cane's.
Mm. Now, there's also a place called Sticky's Finger Joint.
What is that?
That sounds suspect. I don't know what that is.
It's a chicken finger place that had already been here. Maybe they'll go out of business now that we have Raising Cane's. I don't know. I don't eat chicken fingers.
You don't eat anything but like boiled granola. We know this. Stickies. I've never heard of this. I need to try it next time I'm up there.
I will share some news that I don't know if it's accurate anymore, but once upon a time, when people were comparing Church's Chicken to Popeyes to KFC, only one of those chains actually uses like fresh chicken. The other two, they come in frozen.
Of course.
KFC is the fresh one.
Yep. Because KFC is the better one. Wow. I know I will get shots.
I don't know about
listen,
that.
Player, it's the best. Here's the thing. You got to have a caveat. If you bite, and I've talked about this before, if you bite into KFC, you're taking the whole skin with you. It's just gone in one bite. Popeyes is fried better. That's why the perception that is better. The actual chicken is not better.
Now, looking back, I shouldn't have done this, but I used to eat the chicken sandwich at Subway. Have any of y'all ever done that?
No.
I have before, man. But I have no memory of it.
It's like a slab of thing. I don't even know if it's chicken or what it is. It kind of tastes like chicken. You fill it with enough sauce, you're good. But man, that probably was risky now looking back, eating that thing.
I promise you it was risky. Do not do that anymore. You're a parent.
So Tom, I'm going to ask you this as we segue into our actual conversation, which is R&B music. Is that Subway chicken sandwich better than what R&B was in 2012?
Oh, man.
What?
Actually, I'm taking R&B. I feel like we just removed ourselves from getting sponsorship from all these places. Now
I know.
We just chicken fingers. We just chicken slabs. We just processed frozen chicken. What do we got left? We still got Purdue. I'm down with Purdue.
I didn't diss Five Guys. So Five Guys, hit me up for sponsorship. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You, as usual, Tom screws it up.
You said you were the fries swindler. I mean, what does that look like? Running out of the store. Like, I got my fry bag. Watch out
because
for me.
Because I'm smart. I have my bag. You cradle it like a small child, and you're good. Just don't wear your good shirt because it's going to get grease on it.
People all these years have been talking about getting the bag. Now I know what they meant.
This is the definition.
Yes. That's the bag I need.
Oh. Well, yeah, I don't think sponsors are coming our way. Subway's probably like, what's that Victoria Monet song? Stop asking me for ish.
That's exactly what they said.
That's a great song.
That is a great shout out to Victoria Monet. Jaguar 2 in stores now. That is a really good project. A contender for R&B album of the year. And we'll do that later on this year. We'll talk about our favorite albums and songs of 2023. I can't believe the year has already flown by and Usher still has yet to release an album, but it's not about 2023.
Oh, keep on hoping. Guys,
today we talk about 2012. So let's bring it to 2012. This was an interesting point for R&B. I think it was an interesting point for us in our lives. For myself, I remember this year vividly because this was the year Brandy dropped 211. The Twitter streets were going crazy. Tom attended a bunch of different shows, interviewed Brandy amongst other artists. But yeah, I feel like that was when the stan culture was like raging. The stan culture is different now because they don't really support anything. But in 2012, when that Brandy album came out, like stans were everywhere and they went out and they bought that album too.
Yeah, player. I talk about this a lot. I feel like that we have reached like if stan culture is like a mountain, we're on the other side, the slimy side of the mountain. Early 2010, stans were quite annoying because this is the era Soul and Stereo's reviews started getting a little bit more traction and attention, and it was cool. But this is also the time where fans were passionate about projects and they were actually spending money on it and not just attacking other people. So I saw the hustle and I supported the hustle and I couldn't knock the hustle because they were supporting their faves. As we will get to, some of their faves had a shaky year, but I did like that the fans were actually supporting music and going out and buying it and sharing the videos. YouTube was still pretty hot, so it was a fun time.
For us, it was a fun time too, Kyle. We were doing a ton of interviews.
Yeah.
It was still kind of heavily the blog era, so there wasn't all these outlets popping up just yet, and we were getting a ton of opportunities. I feel like we were just interviewing whoever they sent to us, people like Summer Williams, what was her name?
Yes, yes.
But we were just building relationships, and you didn't miss anything. She's actually pretty good. But
we love Summer
Williams.
She
was actually pretty good. Oh, no, she was pretty good. But yes, there were so many of those artists like popping up, is what I meant, like out of nowhere. Weren't trying to get established because we still had these social media, so artists were trying to get on and go around the label, so they were just popping up. But yeah, it was remind me of something, Kyle, talking about this Brandy album.
Yeah,
was this before or after she did that return single with Monica?
That was I want to say after.
That was the next after album. This?
Yeah.
That was the following album. I don't think that was the
gotcha.
Album.
Gotcha. Okay.
No,
I'm just trying to put my timeline together.
Yeah, because I remember because that Monica and Brandy single came out, and that was supposed to be for both of their albums. And then it didn't do well, so Monica ended up putting it on hers, and then Brandy just pretended like it didn't exist and just moved on.
Actually, that may have been this year because the Monica album did come out in 2012. So that may
Yeah,
have been this year.
same era, but I think Brandy just scrapped it because it didn't do well.
Yeah, it
That's what I
didn't
was
hang around
curious
long.
about. Yeah,
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, she just scrapped it, but yeah.
Speaking of, but Tom, can we talk about the blog era really quickly? I got to get this off my chest. And
Uh-oh. Oh, boy.
you mentioned that Brandy and Monica song as well. Because back in the blog era, I feel like blogs were the outlet to receive the information. You learned stuff from reading blogs.
I know where you're going. Hit him, Kyle.
The difference now is, and we both use our social media platforms, Instagram and whatnot. I feel like we're still trying to use those platforms to educate people, but the comments, man, any chance they can to be like, aha, gotcha, or you
Yeah,
got this
yeah.
wrong, they're coming at you right away. And I don't know if you experienced that too. And the reason why I bring this up is, and I feel like in today's social media world, these commenters feel like they have so much power. And as we talk about that Brandy and Monica song, just recently we posted a bunch of songs produced by Rico Love, and someone wrote some slick comment about Rico Love doing the Brandy and Monica song and it failing. And it's just like, why do you need to put that in there? I don't even think
Yeah.
that's necessary.
No player. This is pretty early for me to go on one of my evil rants, but you got me started and we're
Yes.
gonna do it. You are absolutely right. This is the era where I, on Soul and Stereo, could write a review that may have been, if you were a fan of Brandy, for example, and I don't want to go too far and spoil things, but like I thought the album was okay. I could write a review and say this album has good points and it has bad points. Some people might agree, some people might disagree, but they will move on. If that happens in 2023, oh, it's war. Because
Yes.
there's not about talking about the good points or having content that educates or, hey, did you know about so and so and blah, blah, blah. It's always attacking, it's always taking sides. It's
Yes.
not about music, it's about finding something to make Mr. Commenter Man, Miss Commenter
Yes.
Woman get all the attention and all the likes. We have become a like and attention driven society, and we hadn't gotten to
Yeah.
that point yet in 2012. Unfortunately, we jumped that shark here, and I hate it. And please don't come on my comments or my posts if you don't have anything constructive to say. You will get ignored. I'm tired.
Ed, I'm gonna send you this screenshot later. You'd be proud of me. I was very mature with my approach, but I was about to lay the smackdown on them. Anyways.
You've grown, Kyle. I love it.
Yes. All right, let's talk about 2012 here. Can we get into these rookies here really quickly? Because as an overall, I feel like we start seeing some of the moodiness that we talked about in our last episode with The Weeknd, Frank Ocean, and Janae, but these new artists coming in, I think at that time, they're looking at the landscape. EDM is still very present. R&B is there, but it's like commercially not what it used to be. And then there's this new sound, this moody sound that's really starting to hit mainstream. Once it was like a cult following type of thing, a niche market, now it's starting to hit the mainstream. So it's kind of interesting to look at these artists and talk about the sound of these projects. So I'm going to go through this list. Here are the rookies for 2012 here, Tom and Ed. We have Elijah Blake's EP. Tom, is this the one with the Common record on there? XO, I think it
Yep,
was called. Okay.
that's the one.
Elle Varner had her debut album, Perfectly Imperfect, Ed. India
We'll get back
Sean.
to it.
India Sean Origin, that was her debut project. She came back onto the scene probably almost a decade later with that banger album, but Origin was the beginning for her. Ravon Brown, Love Always, the introduction. She was Neo's artist at that time. And then we have Tinashe, In Case We Die. and Reverie. Of those five, I mean, it's a lot of different sounds here, right? Which ones stand out to you as like, yeah, like this was, well, Tom, before we even get into which ones we like the most, can we talk about some of these? Because you interviewed all of them early on.
Yeah. I was really excited about the L. Varner because Oak and Pop, we loved Oak and Pop at the time, the production
Yeah.
duo, and their sound was just so fresh. And, you know, L could do no wrong over, you know, over that production.
And
To
then
not say
Tom,
we,
not to mention with Elle, she was managed by MBK at the time. That's Alicia Keys' people. So it's like she
yeah.
was set up for success
The
there.
setup was there. I
Yeah.
remember being at her show at SOBs where Jeff Robinson, the head of MBK, came out and said, like, this was a similar setup to what Alicia Keys had. So at that moment, I was believing this is going to be it. She's going to be the next big thing. And she was for a while. Tinashe, it's crazy that thinking she's been out for 11 years now. Like,
Yeah.
jeez. Who else said your name? I'm sorry.
Elijah Blake, India Sean, Ravon Brown.
Yeah, I actually did Elijah Blake's literally like first interview. I remember that because they were like giving him coaching tips during the interview. It was pretty interesting. That was in Roc Nation. Cool dude. Ravon Brown was another one I had confidence in. She was a good one too. Still around doing her thing, but it was a promising, when I look back, promising group right there.
Ed, let me ask you this because this is a very talented rookie class. I think all of them have had, some success, but it's kind of unfortunate just due to the time in the industry that they weren't really able to take off with, a lot of longevity. I think of those five, I mean, India Shawn just put out a project, but Tinashe seems to be the only one that has really. And that's even tough to say because she had so much expectation from the jump, and she's found some new success as an independent artist. But man, it was tough for these guys at this time to really push forward.
Man, this is the era. We talked about it. We've been talking about it really throughout this recap.
Yeah.
If this was 2006 or earlier, I think these artists would have had a better shot. But because they came in doing what they were doing as the tectonic plates of R&B were shifting and the ground was swallowing up artists, they just could not get a foothold. Of these five, back then, Tinashe to me for sure was the safe bet. And for a while, it seemed like she was going to be it. But unfortunately, like we said, we know her story. She came on, they completely changed her sound. It didn't work because we talked about the moody sound. I think she did it well on these early records. But then later on, they tried to make her too Sierra-ish and she just dropped a new album this past week of this recording. I haven't heard it yet, but I know she's been trying to reestablish herself. And she was one that I just knew was a sure bet. It just didn't work. It didn't work. And I'm not gonna say it's no fault of her own, but she really just had a lot of handcuffs put on her. Y'all know me and L, so refill. Okay. But I know she had a bass. She had a bass, so props to her for that. But India Shawn is the one that really took me back because when Tom sent this list, I was like, she really dropped that long ago?
She
It
did.
took her 10 years really to get her feet under and have that really, really great renaissance that we've seen in the past couple years. That really should be an example to everybody. We are also another thing, Kyle, that gets on my nerves that we love to do now is every time an artist drops, the first thing we do is run to Wikipedia and see if they didn't debut at number one. Oh, it's a failure. It's a flop. They're trash. Let these artists grow and breathe. There are plenty of people that we know that are legendary today that barely charted above 20, but they're still legends. They still have classic songs. I don't care about the charts. I care about how you impact the genre culturally. And India, in my opinion, is well on that way.
You know what, though? I'll be honest. I miss that era where there were metrics to kind of determine whether you were successful or not. Because you look at the charts now, it makes no sense to me.
You're
Like,
right, and that's why I don't buy it. It makes no sense.
it doesn't. So I can't even get into that argument anymore. It's like, I don't
Yeah.
know what's good. Because if people are streaming it, what does that mean? So someone's got to let us know what the new metric for success is, and don't say it's the impact on the culture, because the culture on Twitter versus the culture in real life, it's two different things.
Yeah, there's people say culture to basically justify whatever they want.
Yes.
But culture is not Twitter. Culture is not TikTok. Yeah. It's more to it than that. It's a nuance that has to be looked at after the fact. That's why I always say you can't call something a classic 2 weeks after it came out. We have to look at it with retrospect and be like, okay, what really happened at the time? Because y'all just getting hype off of something trending on Twitter, you'll forget that next week. That ain't a classic.
So, and we'll Kyle, steal your thunder, but there was a couple other artists who dropped, I think, their debut singles. We'll probably talk about them later down the line, but some didn't even ever have a project. Like Brandon Hines, he was being pushed by Jermaine Dupri.
Oh, yes.
He had a nice setup. Leah LaBelle. I mean, I thought for certain.
Oh, Leah.
Yeah.
She's going to be big. Yes, I knew she was next up. And RIP to my girl.
Rest in peace.
She was great.
Yeah.
Marcus Canty was another one who, I think he had an EP maybe this year or the next one.
He did.
Coming out.
Yeah.
And then, of course, our girl, Seven Streeter, dropped her debut single on Atlantic this year.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought she was another one being pushed by Chris Brown. You would have thought, you know.
Yeah.
But interesting time.
Yep. So we'll talk more about these rookies later on when we decide who the best one is. But Tom, I just got to take it back to Elle real quick. That record that she had with J. Cole, that was a moment. Like when that single came out, I'm like, okay, we have a fresh sound. We have this fresh artist has a record with J. Cole. Like you said, it was truly set up for success here.
I think the cool thing about Elle was like she had that that her image filled a void. Like she was that kind of nerdy, cool girl. She had a funky, fresh sound by that Oak and Pop production.
Yeah.
And it kind of filled the void of the sound we maybe were looking for, because some of our biggest artists at the time, and we'll talk about Usher and Neo, really didn't know where, you know, R&B was in an uncomfortable time in this era.
Yeah.
And it was going in a number of different directions. But I like the sound that Elle came with on that single for sure. It's what I wanted to hear at the time.
Yeah. All right, Ed. We'll get off our Elle Varner soap opera now.
Y'all have fun.
We'll talk about some of these other albums that came out. Let's talk about the ladies here. Some big names that dropped. It's kind of funny looking at these lists now and thinking like, wow, artists, big named artists used to drop albums quite consistently. If it's not every other year, it was every 3 years. And if it was every 4 years, it was like, man, what took you so long? But nowadays, artists just don't even drop albums anymore, except Music Soul Child, apparently.
But they're still good, so I'm not mad.
Yes. All right, so the ladies, let's talk about these albums. We have Alicia Keys, Girl on Fire, Brandy, 2:11, Faith Evans, R&B Divas. I still have a problem with that album for the fact that isn't it supposed to be like for the whole R&B Divas collective and not just Faith Evans? I don't know.
I was so confused, but we'll get to it.
Monica's New Life album. We have Melanie Fiona, the MF Life. SWV's comeback album, I Missed Us. Tamia's Beautiful Surprise. Keisha Cole's Woman to Woman. And Chrisette Michelle had the Aubrey Hepburn mixtape. Dawn Richard, Armor On EP, Estelle, the All of Me album, Vivian Green, The Green Room, and Nina Sky. Of course, we would have this on the list, Tom, Nicole, and Natalie. Now, of these artists that I just named, these great female artists, Ed, I'll start with you. Which one stood out to you, or maybe a couple that are like, I really enjoyed these albums?
Well, first, I want to back up and just talk about how this was still the era, to your point, where we were getting big name established artists dropping stuff regularly.
Yeah.
So everybody you mentioned, Alicia, Brandy, Faith, Monica, like every one of these projects I was excited for, especially SWV.
Yeah.
But 9 times out of 10, I was like, like this was the first Alicia album that started her descent. The Faith album, I was confused because at first I it would. It was going to be, but there's some really songs I love on that thing. Of the ones you mentioned, though, the ones that make me saddest are the ones that I feel like got overlooked. Keisha Cole's Woman to Woman. She had a great start, kind of had a shaky middle when she was doing that kind of reality show era. This was a great rebound, I thought. This is one of her better albums. Mm-hmm. Kind of like went over folks' heads. Tamia, she always delivers, of course. SWV's comeback was incredible. Yes. Such a great album. Of all of these, I was like, it'll be all right. But this one really blew me away. And Melanie, poor Melanie. There is no reason why she shouldn't have been. We should be talking about her saying, oh, she just came out with her third album last week. And it's dope. And it's the album of the year. But this was only the second album she released and the last one to date. She was tired of y'all. I can't blame her. Man, this just depressed me, Kyle. Jeez.
Yep.
Gone and never coming back, Ed.
That is the song, guys. That is the song.
But why is Summer Walker still here? When's she going to take a break?
Oh, stop. That's E.T. Bowser
on Twitter, yes.
On X. On X.
We love you, Summer.
Well,
do we actually? I don't even think
Tom. I love Summer Williams. I love Summer Walker. We love all summers here on the Soulback podcast.
On a more serious note, that when I was thinking about the Faith Evans, you were just talking about it. We have to talk about R&B Divas, the show, because I remember that being kind of monumental, and we thought, here we go, here's the platform that the genre needs to bring it back. And then what happened? It actually turned into a bunch of drama and didn't make some people look too good. And at the end of the day, it really didn't do anything, if I'm being honest, in my opinion. What do you think?
No, it didn't. And look, I love the show. I was a huge fan of the show. I wouldn't say I'm a defender of the show because I recognize the good and the bad of it. But it was highly entertaining. I loved the following seasons that came up. But as far as helping the genre or even helping any of the artists, I can't think of anybody except maybe Kiki, who got a little bit of shine. But even that was just more of a making her a reality star. I didn't see her getting a career boost from this. So unfortunately, no, I can't think of a way that it helped R&B. It maybe extended, got them a few more bookings, as Kelly Price would infamously say. But no, it was not what we expected. I loved every episode, came front. But as far as helping the genre, I can't say it did.
No, because I remember R&B Divas, LA. Kelly Price didn't look too good on that.
No, she was booked, Kyle. She was booked. But it was cool seeing my girl, Claudette. It was cool seeing my girl, Lil Mo. I was happy seeing Monifa kind of got like a new start. So I was happy to see that. And we can kind of check up on our phase. But as far as the music, didn't happen. Just drama. Hmm.
Dawn also didn't look too good on that, did she?
Oh, no. Yeah. Although, I was worried about her being in there anyway. I was like, uh-oh. Kelly, I was sad about. But, yeah. Our legends weren't looking too great after that show.
Tom, let's bring it to you. 2012, all these female acts. I guess from your perspective, which album were you most hyped about?
Oh. I was probably, I don't think I was really looking forward to Alicia. Brandy, I didn't know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
It was about, like kind of Ed said, they had some good songs, but overall kind of uneven. Monica, I don't know. Like, to me, one of the best projects, which I didn't expect to be good, was a Chrisette Michelle, the mixtape, just because the sound was fresh.
Yeah.
It really wasn't what I expected, but I actually liked it. But SWV, I didn't expect to be good, but like Ed said, was really good. But I don't know. I feel like this was the time I even stopped having expectations. Oh, go ahead.
Was this the SWV song with that amazing album with that amazing Zelda?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it was. That was the title track. Spin that regularly. What a song.
Yeah.
Yes. Listen, if you sample Nintendo songs, you're off to a good start.
You get an automatic star added to your review every time. Yep.
I feel like we need to start sampling Mega Man too. I think there's some gems in there.
Yeah, why hasn't anybody done that yet? Get some of these weirdo rappers on it. What's Lil Wayne doing? Get him on a Mega Man beat. He sound okay.
Yeah, because I most recently heard a rap song and they sampled Who Let the Dogs Out.
What? Oh my goodness.
And I was like, why? I've seen Hot in here. I've seen that Little Flip Sunshine record, and now we have Who Let the Dogs Out.
I saw the first two. I did not see Who Let the Dogs Out. Both of those were horrible. Those were not even samples. That was people karaoke-ing over a song that already existed. It's not a sample. No. But I'll get on that rant another time.
Yes. Is Who Let the Dogs Out a good R&B song, Ed?
Kyle, I'm about to log off. All right. 10 minutes, I'm out of here.
All right. For me, what kind of stood out during this era, I mean, I remember the hype around Brandy's album. Alicia Keys' Girl on Fire is probably top five worst. Well, worst is a harsh word. Most annoying songs of all time.
Yes.
Yeah, that.
Cosign.
Yeah, that was bad. But you kind of also understood why she did it, because it is an anthem. It is a huge pop anthem. It's a stadium anthem. So can you really be mad? And it's not, and it's an empowering song, so it's not offensive.
No, I didn't say that it wasn't empowering. I just said it was annoying. It can be all these things.
Yes, that is true.
It's an annoying, empowering song.
Let's get into
I have something for you to reflect on.
Yeah.
When you think about the Brandy album, right? Because I remember the hype around it too. Reflect on this. How were artists promoting their albums back then differently than they are now? Because how was an artist like Brandy able to get so much hype for her project back then? Do you remember?
Well, I remember that era being the, like, that next wave of Brandy fans. Like, you have the original Brandy fans that grew up with her from the first album. I feel like the 2011 album represented all the fans of Full Moon and the birth of that generation of Brandy stans. And so I think it was the excitement of that. It was the return for Brandy to R&B because Human was more on the poppy side. Mm-hmm. Of course, having the Chris Brown feature was big. You had Sean Garrett and Rico Love doing the majority of the album, and they were two of the biggest producers at that time. So there's a lot of hype going into this. And I think also, to an extent, I think people were just craving for some good mainstream R&B music at that time, because as we talk about with some of these male acts later, everyone was moving towards EDM. So yeah. I think this was kind of Brandy's void to fill. And I think, to her credit, it's not an album that I look back at so much now. I think people kind of call it a Twitter classic. I would argue for its time, it was great. And I can still listen to a bunch of songs now. Not so much those Sean Garrett Bangladesh songs, because it's just it's just too loud for me. I need my songs a little slower these days. But no, overall, I think it was a great moment. And like I said, that Monica and Brandy duet, that was a big moment for R&B. Unfortunately, didn't pan out the way we thought it would, but I can't be mad. And like I said, like you guys said with Melanie Fiona, I thought she was next up. She had the 4 a.m. record. And I know a lot of people were looking at her as, you know, she's a great vocalist. She looks great. She can perform well live. Her records were actual R&B songs. I don't know what happened. I think it was just the timing of it all, but we miss Melanie Fiona. Still waiting on that next album. Shoutouts to Melanie.
What a lost talent. I get so sad. She should have been next up.
But Ed,
I really wonder why she decided to stop recording. Must be a reason, but
motherhood is it takes over.
That's what it was. Yeah. She wanted to do family stuff. I can't blame her. You know, be with your children or deal with these weirdos on Twitter. What are you gonna do?
All right. Sorry, you know, before we get into the men, because I'm just looking at the list for the men here, we forgot another rookie, which was Q Parker's Emmanuel, his solo album, The Man from 112. That was just some great, like, adult R&B. Yeah. Just a well-produced album. So
I've got to go back and revisit that one. I definitely listened to it at the time, but I don't remember anything about that one. I remember Slim's albums, but yeah. I can't recall this one.
Yeah, because here's my thing about like solo 112 albums. You need the group dynamic because their voices just went so good with each other when it's just
right.
a full, and they're all great singers, but a full album of Q or a full album of one of Slim, it's not the same.
Yeah, it's like you're waiting for that other dynamic to come in. It never does. So yeah, I see that. I got to go revisit this Q one though, because I vaguely remember it being cool, but I need to check it out.
Right. Let's talk about 2012 male artists.
Boy.
This one gets a little more interesting than I think the ladies do. You have Usher's Looking for Myself album, and you have Neo's Red albums. Let's just pause here because I remember when those two albums came out. And at that time, I was so much waiting for Usher and Neo to make that comeback to R&B. I'm like, okay, they had their dance era. There's going to be some R&B on here. Of course, this is the era where they would release like two singles at once, one to urban radio and one to pop. So Usher had Climax, which was actually to both, but then after that it was Scream and what's the other record? It was the record with Rick Ross.
What was it? Let me see. I get there. It's like he has a record and then Rick Rock has one with him. And I get the two mixed up.
I think it's Let Me See. Okay. And then Neo, of course, had Let Me Love You Until You Learn. And then on the R&B side, he had Lazy Love. So it's kind of an interesting approach. Now, Ed, you look back at both of these albums, and I can be the first to say that Tom hated both albums. And I wasn't really too fond of them either. But you've looked back at both of them since then. I think there's a little more appreciation there.
Absolutely. So if I am, let's take two sides of this. If I am being unbiased reviewer Ed, and I am looking at the things that I do when I review albums and break down what's good and bad, and I accept them for what they are, Red and especially the Usher album, I cannot say they're bad albums. Are they albums I play off the time? Absolutely not. Are they albums I wanted at the time? Absolutely not. Especially Usher. I felt it was almost like a weird curve because we heard the singles and was like, oh, okay, we're going to get back to Usher being Usher. And then we didn't. So it was a little jarring. But from an actual technique and technical aspect, I cannot say these are bad albums. However, the R&B community can raise their eyebrows because it ain't what we wanted to hear, especially at that time. Because things weren't as bad as they would get, but things were starting to look a little shaky. So we're looking to our legends to be like, all right, you had your fun. You did your little goofy EDM. Come on back home. And then they didn't. And then they kind of never did. Or they did and like sort of. So this is a part where a lot of fans got really disenchanted in some ways. And I understand that. But I can't objectively say these are horrible albums. They're just not really what we wanted.
So, can I give my recollections?
Of course you will.
I like the term you used, Ed, disenchanted. I became disenchanted with Usher after Raymond vs. Raymond a couple years earlier. So, when this album was coming out, I was not looking forward to it. And now that I look back on it, and I love Usher, I'm an Usher fan, but this, to me, is his worst album by far. Like,
really?
Undisputed.
Undisputed. Did you hear A?
Is that an album? I mean, we're calling that an album?
That's an EP. That's an EP.
Well, what's the album with the broken up face on it?
Heart to Love?
I'm taking that one because I like
You're taking Heart to Love over this? Oh, my gosh.
I didn't like any song on this Usher album, and I revisited it recently, believe it or not. So I was already bracing for it to me to not like it at the time, and it just made matters worse for me as an R&B fan at the time because it was like, this is not what we needed, Usher, for R&B.
Wait,
and
you had hold on, Tom. You didn't like Scream?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Just
no.
Checking.
Why you needed to check that, I don't know, but no.
No. And then you have Neo. I'm a huge Neo fan. This is around the time he had that song with Calvin Harris, "Let's Go." Do you remember that? Like,
oh yeah,
how can you not?
I did not want to hear that from Neo. So, but Libra Scale, which came before that, that was the one before this, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I actually liked. So I was actually slightly optimistic, but then it quickly went downhill. And I'm going to call this. Yeah, this is probably Neo's worst album, either this or Good Man, but I'm probably giving it to this. I didn't like Lazy Love. It felt like a lazy R&B single.
Lazy Love was lazy. It was lazy. It lived up to his name.
Yes. And there's just, there's like an album track I like on here, but otherwise.
Wait, there's two songs on there. You have Jealous and you have Miss Right.
Yeah. I mean, fine. We have two good album cuts out of like, this album had like, the bonus version had like 20 songs.
It was a beast.
Yeah.
So it was not a good time. Just like in a microcosm, like those were two of the biggest stars in R&B and they let us down and that hurt as an R&B fan.
Yeah. I was at a wedding recently and they were playing the hottest hits from the 2010s. They had that Like a G6 song on blast, guys. That was that was a rough time for music.
Like a G6.
Oh boy.
How did we get to that point? Anyways, that's a rant for another day. Let's continue on here. We had Trey Songz Chapter 5. We had Frank Ocean's Channel Orange. Now, we don't need to talk about that one to talk about how hyped that was. Luke James' Whispers in the Dark. Miguel's Kaleidoscope Dream. Daily, Alone Together. Eric Benet, The One. Dwale, Greater Than One, his last album to date. John B., Comfortable Swag. And then we had Tanks, This Is How I Feel. Tom, this Comfortable Swag album, didn't John also touch on some electronic sounds on this album?
He did. Mm-hmm. He was experimenting too.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I believe that was actually John's last album. He had like a B-sides thing that came out after, but that was his last album. Yeah, he went in a different direction too, but I can't hate him because I know John and he just likes making music and he was just trying things. He didn't need to do well. He just did his thing.
Yes.
It is what it is.
And then we also have Robert Glasper's Black Radio. Of course, he had a couple more Black Radios after that, but that was the first. That was a great start for him. Chris Brown's Fortune album. And we have The Man We Cannot Name, Write Me Back. Continuing his dominance in R&B, adult R&B at that time. I just named a couple of albums here. Ed, I'm going to throw a couple at you just to give us some perspective. Because you love that moody R&B.
Oh, do I now?
Well, you loved Luke James' Whispers in the Dark.
Now, I do love that mixtape. Oh, my goodness. So this, we've said this a bunch on this episode, and this is why 2012 is so depressing for me. Because there were so many albums that I was like, okay, this is it. And we had heard Luke before this, but I thought that this was an opportunity to take that moody sound with an actual vocalist and do some cool stuff with it. It's still by far the best thing he's ever done. I was so excited. That thing got endless play up in our house and the Miguel trio of mixtapes as well that would become the Kaleidoscope album. Same thing. My wife wore all of those out. To this day, she still plays those things. Mm. Great, great stuff that unfortunately didn't lead to the great things we expected. But in a moment, I thought that Luke was the one.
Strawberry Vapors, Kyle.
Yeah, what does that mean? What does Strawberry Vapors mean?
I don't know.
Nah, but sounds great. It sounded great.
His music was always a kind of weird at times, but it does sound great.
Yeah. Is that on streaming platforms?
I seriously doubt it.
Oh,
it
wasn't. Man.
I looked a while ago and it wasn't. It might be there now.
I just have to share. This is one of the highlights of my career as a blogger. I was at the release show for this album, for this EP, whatever it was called. And his producer, Danger, who he was signed to, randomly in the middle of the show, bought out the entire bar for everyone in the venue.
Wow.
It was open bar on Danger. That was a great time.
Shout out to Danger and the black card for that.
Yes, yes. The metal card. We love that metal card. But you know what? When you believe in an artist, you'll go a long way. Now, today, no one really does that anymore, but Tom, I'm glad you were able to experience that.
I don't even think I was able to make it to the bar to get a drink. Everyone swarmed so quickly. People forgot
I
there was
bet.
still a show going on.
Poor Luke, he's up there
My
trying to sing
goodness.
Strawberry Vapors, and y'all over there getting lit.
They gained their margarita on. Ed, I'm gonna ask you a serious question here.
Okay.
Because I know Tom's never listened to this album. But maybe his wife has. Frank Ocean's Channel Orange. Is this the five
Kyle?
star? Yes.
Kyle?
Yes,
I
Tom.
May have never listened to it, but I still have a strong opinion about it. Now
All
continue
right.
it. Now
hey.
Go ahead, Ed.
Are you allowed to have it? Are you allowed to have an opinion on something that you've never heard?
Yes,
Actually,
this is
have you ever
2023.
seen social media? Yes.
All right, all right. Let me pull up this track list here just to see if I actually tried listening to this. Okay, so you have the Bridget Kelly song. Oh, this
I
is
was
not.
Gonna say you definitely know that.
Pyramids. Actually, I think my wife likes this album. But anyway, Ed, is this the five-star R&B classic? Legendary album that Twitter and basically every media outlet aside from You Know I Got So, I don't know where Someone Stereo stands on this. Is
We're
this
about to learn.
Is this all of the be all the above or is it not?
I can answer that in two words that I have made so famous. Player, please.
Oh, Ed.
Look, it's a very good album for Frank Ocean. His later albums, I don't think, measured up to this. And I do think that there's this conversation between established R&B fans. I always try to look at things objectively, not just my personal viewpoints. Established R&B fans had issues with the album that I understand. The album is not perfect. I'm sorry, people who just started listening to R&B in 2012. If this is your first R&B album, of course you think it's the best thing ever. It is better than some people say, but it's not as great as others say for reasons that we've talked about here a million times before. There's some issues with some of the pacing. There's issues with some of the actual vocals. But as an album for an era, it definitely defined an era. And as an album that has gone on to have status among a certain generation of fans, I can't take that away from them. That's true. But it's not a perfect album. It ain't the best album in 2012 if you want to be for real, for real. But if we're just talking about its legacy, yes, it has a legacy. And I can admit it's a pretty strong album. I listened to it at the time. I don't listen to it too much these days except for the hidden track that nobody shows love. It's called Golden Girl. That song goes hard. I don't know why it's not on stream.
So I'm on Wikipedia right now looking at the accolades. And I'm going to call out these outlets because it's important we do that. The Guardian had this as the 12th greatest album of the 21st century. So everything post,
oh my goodness,
2001.
Absolutely not.
Which could be true. Which could be true, but
of all genres or just R&B?
Of all genres.
Oh my goodness.
Absolutely not.
All right. And then the Rolling Stones, which is a very well-established company.
Oh, really?
Ranked it at number Ed, behave. They ranked it at number 13 on their best 100 debut albums of all time.
Of all time?
I think between the three of us, we can name 13 R&B albums that are greater than this one. 13 debut
yes.
albums.
Most of them are back there. Yes.
Yes. Yes. But anyway, I'm glad. Let's put a positive spin on it. I'm glad that there's a generation of R&B fans that look at this album like their confessions.
Well, hold on. Let's put a negative spin on it and let me share my feedback.
All right.
Of course.
Oh, man.
I have 3 points to make. One, I didn't like how he stole that song back from our girl, Bridget Kelly. And kind
no,
of
I knew this.
Was arrogant about it, too. It wasn't like, you know, kept it humble or whatever. Like, I wrote this, I'm actually going to keep it. It was just like kind of arrogance. Didn't like that. Number two, I really didn't think he was a good singer. It sounded off key. It just wasn't appealing to me at all. It felt, and that leads me to number three, it felt overhyped. It almost felt like there was this big hype machine. And I remember vividly, now there's nothing wrong with being gay, but he came out right during the promotion of the album, which I didn't like because it felt contrived. just to push sales. Like, come out anytime you want. Don't just do it during the promotion of your album to push your record. That really bothered me. Made it not feel authentic to me.
Wait.
That's my...
Wait. Did it work, Ed?
It worked. So. Now, here's... I'm going to be very careful because I'm not going to speak on this directly because I can't speak on that man's sexuality by any
means. No, not at all.
But I do remember... And I've talked about this, and this is something that younger fans do not understand. I've had many arguments in the Soul and Stereo Cypher on Facebook. Go check it out. Where fans don't realize that, unless I'm missing something, somebody please correct me. I cannot think of a hip-hop or R&B artist of that magnitude who ever came out before this album. This, at the time, was a massive, massive risk. And it paid off in the best way. Like, it was the perfect time to do that because every other artist, it was just rumors or somebody we thought or artists that we have since known, we do know now their sexuality. They were not out then. It was just maybe sorta. He came out as, I think came out as bi. But the thing is, he came out, he was embraced. And yes, that in a way helped elevate the legacy of this album. Am I speaking to the quality? I'm not saying that, oh, he only got it because this and that. Stay out of my DMs. I'm not saying that. If you go to Soul and Stereo, you see that I have it ranked very highly on the best albums of 2010 for R&B. But just 2010 R&B, not best album debuts of all time. You've lost your mind. It ain't better than that. But it's a great album for its time. But it was an album that was the perfect album for a generation culturally. And that's why it's been elevated, in my opinion.
A couple more albums. Miguel's album. What a phenomenal album. Adorned.
Now, this album
is
my number one.
Calm down.
You got me hyped, Kyle. You got me hyped.
Calm down. Adorned, some say, is still number one on the Urban AC charts.
Yes, I'm pretty sure. It's on somebody's TikTok right now.
That thing will never die. We have Chris Brown's Fortune album, Trey Songz' Chapter 5 album. Ed, I gotta be honest, I love your two guys from VA, but these albums, I kind of felt like, I never really liked it, but they did well.
Fortune's all right. Chapter 5, the way Tom feels about Looking for Myself is how I feel about this album. It's his worst album by far.
This is the album with I Came Here for Two Reasons.
Oh my goodness. Well, let me ask you, Kyle. So we know where Usher and Neil were going, then like obviously Trey and Chris Brown were some of the younger superstars. What direction were they going at the time? Were they looking for a sound, or were the song was popular?
Bottoms up. That's what they were going for.
Yeah, so at least I think Chris was everywhere, but that's kind of what he's been his whole career. He's always done the dance stuff. With Trey, I don't think he received as much backlash because even though he was making trendy records, they geared more towards hip hop than they did towards EDM. So it's like, even if you were a traditional R&B fan, I think it still kind of made more sense than doing a complete 180 and working with Calvin Harris. So it was a little different. Can we talk about that Man We're Not Allowed to Talk About album, Write Me Back? This one wasn't as good as Love Letter, if I remember correctly.
No, it was Love Letter Part 2, except the watered-down version. And I understand why he went back to that well, because it worked so well the last time. But, yeah, this one was like, okay, we already heard this. It was almost like the B-sides of that one.
I always thought it was just leftovers from the session of that other album.
It probably was.
And, like, and it made an album.
Yes.
That's what it sounded like.
Trying to figure out what else we need to talk about. You know what? Let's wrap this up. Tank's This Is How I Feel album. This was an interesting album. He kind of went in like a really different direction, I feel like, on this one. It wasn't what I was expecting.
What was the main single on that one? Was that the Sammy written song, Next Verse?
Yeah, and then I think Compliments was on that one too.
I feel like every sound, every song on this album, I feel like had a different sound. It was kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
You just beat me to it. I feel like this one was quite unfocused. It was, This is around the era where Tank really wasn't doing it for me, and this is one of those albums that kind of encapsulates why. It's like he was trying to do too much of everything, and as a project, it just makes for a distracting listen. It had its moments, but I wasn't loving it.
Yeah. I forgot to talk about a female album, but it's we'll talk about it later. It's from our girl Keisha Cole. I think this may have been the era that she blocked me, but we'll talk about it in we'll talk about it in our rankings because I want to save some room for that one. But guys, let's circle back to the rookies of the year here. We have Elijah Blake, Elle Varner, India Sean, Ravon Brown, Tinashe. Do we count Frank Ocean? Because his debut album technically was released here, but he had the ultrasonic Sonic Village. I don't know. What was that thing
Sonic
called?
Village?
I don't know.
Now you've got me. It's ultra, the nostalgic ultra.
Oh,
like
yes,
that.
Yes.
You got me confused at this point.
We
no,
counted,
I don't count it.
We counted,
counted
yeah,
it last time.
Okay, sounds good. Okay, so of those that I just mentioned, and Q Parker, we can't forget about Q Parker. Who is your rookie of the year? Ed?
This is so weird because, to be honest, most years that we've discussed these rookies, there's always one standout that's for sure. Like, there's a Marsha. There's like, there, she just descends from the heavens and the skies open up. These rookies, like, everybody's okay. In hindsight, I could say India just because I love what she's doing now. But at the moment, I wasn't, like, jumping for joy over that project. I guess I'll go with Tinashe. She was the one that I thought had the most promise. I like these projects, and I thought there was more to come. And I do like her later stuff, but mm-hmm. she just wasn't the superstar that we expected. I'll go with Tinashe.
Tom?
Since Ed would rather harm himself than give Elle Varner credit for anything, someone's got to pick it up for the rookie of the year.
Yeah, that's true.
Elle Varner. What was that term you just used? Nothing opened up. The heavens didn't open up and give us someone. I felt like the heavens opened up, and we had this great new artist, Elle Varner, in 2012.
Yes. Yeah, the heavens opened up and was like, and I went
this
somewhere
guy.
Else.
Oh,
my God.
I bet your wife loved that album.
That's a good question. I need to ask her. I think she did like that song. I don't remember the thoughts on that album.
Gotcha. We'll revisit next episode. When you have the results, I know Marlene liked it.
Well, yes. We will not be doing that. I got better things.
I'm also going to go with Elle Varner. I thought that was a solid project from top to bottom. But Ed, before we move on to the other rankings, I'm going to give you a scenario here.
No, okay.
Imagine you're tied with your arms behind your back, and you either have two choruses playing. You either have the Refo chorus playing.
My God.
Or the Keisha Cole Love chorus playing. Which one are you going with?
I'm going to be chewing off my leg. But I'm going to go with Love because I did like Love initially. But it's just after the 10,000th radio play. I remember where I was. I was in my wife's apartment. This was before we got married. And someone next door played that song on repeat. And I thought I was just going to chew through the walls to get through this person. That was the moment when I was like, I can't with this song anymore. Mm. But before that, song was fine. I could never get my refill going. So I'll let y'all have that one.
Damn.
Keisha.
All right. Me. All right.
Keisha hasn't blocked me yet, so I can be nice to Keisha.
All right. Let's talk about our top three favorite albums of 2012. And yes, you guys do get some honorable mentions if you guys want. But
yes,
Tom, I will start with you.
I'll do the honorable mentions. I just have two. I'm looking at my list here, finalizing it real quick. I got to give an honorable mention to Chrisette Michelle, which I mentioned before, which, if I remember correctly, this mixtape led up to her, which we consider her best album, which would come the following year.
Yep. Kyle, very soon.
Yeah, which you really like.
Yep.
And then I got to give a shout out to my guy, Eric Benet. Really liked his project as well, The One. Number three for me is, and this is actually surprised me. I don't remember loving it at the time, but as time has gone on and I've spent time with it and revisited, Duelle is Greater Than One album.
Oh,
I actually really, really like, and I revisit it quite often. So, and still kills me that that's the last album he's given us. Believe it or not, I'd argue that's either his best or second best album. And we can debate that another time, but
yeah.
I really liked it.
I don't know if it's his best, but it's definitely up there. I props for that ranking. I give you that one.
All right, Ed, number three.
All right, so I'm going to go with my honorable mentions. If I was being unbiased reviewer, I would have Whispers in the Dark all up in here, but yeah. We actually have some good rankings this year. Like, we got some good albums, so I can't put him in my honorable mentions. I just want to shout him out because I love that record. But my honorable mentions, I got to go with Melanie because, great album, and she just makes me so sad. Just the hearing of her name just breaks my heart.
Oh, man.
And then Keisha Cole, as we just talked about, her Woman to Woman album, I thought was very, very underrated for what it was. Some great album cuts. Hey Sexy should have been on that
oh, yes.
should have been on somebody's radio.
Oh,
such
yes.
Such a fun song.
Oh, yes.
But number three, I'm going to go with an album that, like Tom said, I didn't appreciate as much at the time as I do now, but it's great for what it is, and that's Black Radio, Robert Glasper. Mm. Really fun project. Great concept. I love just like getting all your crew together for a jam session. We need more albums like this for R&B and hip hop. The later ones were good too, but can't top the first one. So that's my number three.
Yes, yes. For me, my honorable mention, we didn't even get a chance to talk about her, but I got to give a quick shout out to the Canadians. You got to go with Tamia here, her beautiful surprise album. That was a solid album. I mean, Tamia doesn't really have bad albums.
Nope.
But I want to give a shout out to that. My number three, when we talk about Canadians, guys, we'll talk about Melanie Fiona. I really like this album. It was a solid album from top to bottom. So got to give it to Melanie here. Number two, Tom.
Well, the skies are opening up once again, and Elle Varner has arrived at number two.
Oh, my God.
Let me explain something.
Burrow underground.
Let me just explain something. This was 2012. We were having our favorite stars going in every which way direction, EDM. We had this moody sound coming out that I wasn't getting with. I wanted some good, feel-good R&B music, and Elle Varner hit the spot at the time. I'm a sucker for great production, though. Oak and Pop, at that time, could do no wrong. So well-produced, so that's my pick.
Solid pick.
Sorry, Ed.
Well produced. I will give that props there. I will unbiased reviewer will say it's well produced.
And well unbiased. Sung, Ed. Well sung.
The what?
Well sung.
Oh, don't get them started.
Let's go to number two.
All
because
right.
Since we're talking about being unbiased, I have to be the one person who gives props when it's due. Yes, number two will be Channel Orange.
Wow.
Yes, because I have to be unbiased. And that's what I'm doing here. An album that might not always fit in the box that we want to put it in, but for what it is, it's a strong project and definitely has a legacy for it. So it gets number two. Not higher than that, though.
So this is no coincidence. Or actually, it is a coincidence, but maybe it's not. Because my number two is the man that drop-kicked someone live on stage, and I feel like doing that to you right now. I gotta give it to Miguel's Kaleidoscope Dream. Now, this is not an album that I loved when it first came out, but it's an album that's grown with me. Really started appreciating the sounds of this album. I don't love it from top to bottom. There's still some songs that are too cool for school, but when it's good, it's really good. So number two is Miguel for me. And Tom, we are at number one now.
Kyle, can I take you back to a moment in the history of R&B?
Yes. In 2012?
I believe so.
Yes, what?
Wow.
It was actually 2013.
Okay.
You had me tuning in to watch the Grammy Awards.
Yes.
Except we found out the R&B portion was no longer broadcast during the main portion.
Oh, man.
So we had to watch some, I think it was someone with like a webcam or something in a high school cafeteria where they filmed this portion of the awards. It was pretty sad. But anyway, our boy Robert Glasper took home the Grammy. I thought it was an epic moment for R&B. I didn't appreciate the album at the time, but as I look back in history and revisited it, amazing project, and his later ones are just as good. But I mean, even that, I remember that Music Soul Child and Chrisette Michelle duet he had on there.
Yes.
That was a collaboration I had wanted to hear between them two, and a sound I wanted to hear from them too. So it was like the perfect, song for me from them. So That's my number one.
Wait, Ed, let me get this straight. Robert Glasper was nominated for a Grammy that year, and Chris Brown is still out here asking who Robert Glasper is?
Cousin Chris need to be kneecapped a long time ago. I told you about your boy. He is ridiculous. This attention troll.
All right.
Can't wait till his new album comes out so I can yell about that. But we're talking about 2012 and good stuff, and that's why I'm not talking about Fortune. I'm going to talk about my number one album right now. Like you, Kyle, this is an album at the time I liked, but over time I grew to appreciate more and more. I think my original review, I gave it 4 stars, but later, years later, when I started ranking albums, I upped it by like a 0.5. To me, the best album of the 2010s for R&B to this day is still Miguel's Kaleidoscope Dream. That's my number one.
Wow.
And if I could just add one thing, I thought his rollout where he was doing that 3-part series was way ahead of its time. Because look, now no one has an attention span to listen to a full album, but that was like the perfect dose to give people to get them into each portion. And it's like, why haven't more people ever followed that? I have no idea.
Yeah.
And I know I'm just judging by, I know I'm being a homer and I'm just judging by what happens literally in my house. But my wife was a huge R&B fan, as we all are. Today, she is not a huge R&B fan for the many reasons we have discussed throughout this podcast over the years. But she was so excited for these projects because, like Tom just said, they built anticipation. You got 3 or 4 songs that she would wear out. And then, oh, crap, on Friday, we're going to get some more songs. And, oh, here comes. Like, it was so much anticipation. And we got the full album, and it actually flowed like an album. It was so smartly done. I don't know why. I think maybe Jesse Ware or somebody. No, Jesse J, I think, did it later on.
That's right.
But the point is, we need more of this. It was very creative and a great project for sure, for sure.
Yeah. My number one, guys. So I was going to go with Keisha Cole because I actually really like this album from top to bottom. I think the most underrated album of her discography.
Yep.
I would rank it over the third album, A Different Me.
Easily.
So Keisha Cole's my number one, but because I'm a Brandy stan, 211's my number one. So thank you very
much.
Oh
my God.
Oh man.
Pull the fast one.
If I remember
there.
Correctly, Kyle didn't even like this album at the time that much, if I remember correctly. I think you tried to force yourself. No, you didn't try to even. You were like, eh.
Yeah. I tried. Believe me, I tried.
Like a few things on that album. I'll give it that.
Yes.
If those song came, if the Chris Brown song came out today, it'd be our R&B song of 2023.
Yeah.
That album that has that song Slower on it.
Yes.
That's a great song.
Yeah, it's got some joints. Yeah.
Yep. This is a very uneventful ending to this podcast, guys.
Very. What a downer.
Normally, we'd be jumping for joy at the quality of music, but yeah.
Looking back, now that we did this episode, this year wasn't that good. That's what I'm thinking.
No, I contend that there were great things, but what was not good is the people we expected to be good were not good. Man, Cousin Chris phoned it in. Trey Songz, I don't know what was going on. Alicia, I don't know what's going on. Monica, just okay. Faith, I don't even know what that was supposed to be. You just gave us some leftovers. And then he was like, here's a random song from the lady from Brownstone. It's R. Kelly was like, hey, here's some more of some stuff to like. I got a little bit more for you. Have these warmed over leftovers. It was just unfocused. But there were good projects. I think we all had strong top threes, minus one of Kyle's. Actually, no, that was you, Tom.
Yeah.
Actually, it was both of y'all.
I didn't pick Al Varner.
Okay. I'm just...
Listen, check with your wife. You may be forced to like this album before the end of the night. That's all I got to say.
Not have that conversation.
All right. So 2012 is a wrap. I think we'll do 2013. We can do 2014. And then I think... Yeah. I think that might be it, guys.
No, we've got to do 2015. 2015 has some stuff.
You could actually name
Jasmine
off the top
got
of your head. How do you know that off the top of your head? I could not name anything.
It's me. I'm a robot when it comes to this stuff.
All right. And then after 2015, I think we got to like touch on the New Jack Swing era. The Motown era.
Yeah, oh. I've got to bring something back because after once we hit 17 and you're 18, that's your girl, LMA. 2019, that was like the dirt worst. Let's get to 2015 and then we'll see what goes after.
And then we'll go to modern day and just pretend that the last 5 years didn't exist because Tom's listening to new albums again. That's a good thing.
Oh man, one album. I will listen to that Kevin Ross album when it comes out on Friday. I'll tell you that. Or EP.
Oh, yes. Kevin Ross never lets us down. Maybe we'll get Kevin Ross back on a Soulback podcast episode.
Yes. He was a great guest. Yes. Get him back.
Yes.
Would he sit here and trash the previous years with us as well?
He's too nice of a guy. He won't tell us what he really thinks of 2017. Trust me.
That is true. All right. So I guess that's it for R&B this week of 2012. We'll be back again soon for 2013. My time is limited, guy. I'm expecting a child here, so I gotta get this done before this kid comes out, and then it's team no sleep, but I'm still good until then.
Well, we will hold it down in the meantime. I don't know, next week
maybe. Actually, a fun fact for everyone. I'm going to Beyonce tomorrow. I'm going to the Renaissance tour.
Oh, really?
I am. Shout outs to Beyonce's publicist. She hooked this up. I will also be at the Renaissance cocktail hour, I think it is, where you're just drinking with other Beehive members. I will be there for that.
Oh, man.
There will be stories.
Yes.
Pro tip, don't down cocktails and try to ride around on the horse.
Yeah,
that'd be a bad idea.
Yeah,
that horse looks slippery. I think you slide off.
Should I show up in a silver suit and a cowboy hat too, Ed?
No, you are not Cisco from 1999. Don't do that.
Oh man. All right. Well, I'll be back next week to let you know if it was worth $500 or whatever they're charging for that concert. Because
my wife still won't let me see what she paid for, so I don't even want to know.
You know what?
How Mario Wine is to this. I don't want to know.
But last rant for you guys before we get out of here. $500 doesn't really get you a lot in today's inflated market. It gets you like two cheeseburgers and like a can of pop.
You look at it, it's not water. Yes, that's all you're getting.
It's
a handshake and a good time is about it.
Yeah. These R&B streets are tough.
They're tough. But,
yep.
Yes, yes. So anyways, guys, we'll be back soon with another episode. Ed, what's going on with So In Stereo? I always want to make sure we plug Ed because he's doing some real cool rankings. You did one on P. Diddy recently, who has an album dropping. Love.
Yeah, so as of this recording, this coming Friday, Puffy will finally save R&B with the Love album, allegedly. So before we get to that, I went back and just ranked all of his albums, his solo albums. There's a bunch of albums I'm sure y'all forgot about, so go check that out. And we're also going through the year 1998, my favorite year ever to be on the planet. And we're going through looking back at some of the best hip-hop and R&B of that time. We just did the album from Lauryn Hill. We just did Nicole Ray's album. We've got Outkast. We've got Jay-Z. We've got Black Star coming up for September. So lots of dope stuff. And of course, my girl Kelly Price was also in August too. So go check those out.
Nice. Now, Tom, do you think this Diddy album will save R&B?
I mean,
we're finally here. Question? We're finally here. We've been talking about this album for 3 years.
It's not. That's all I can say. It's not.
Oh,
gonna,
man.
If I hear one auto-tuned note, I am going off.
You saw the track list. How many of those artists can sing without auto-tune?
Yeah.
You rest. The case has been rested, Tom. The case has been rested. That track list does not give me faith.
Yes.
Speaking of, where was Faith? She should have been on a track list.
Exactly. No,
I think The Weeknd's on it, if that interests you.
It does not.
Okay. So we will
see. Is Mario Winans even on this thing? I mean, that should be mandatory.
I don't think so.
Maybe he's got a writing credit. He'll be in the credit.
No, he's probably in the background somewhere dying or...
dying
his heart out while no one cares.
Yes, he's the saddest man in R&B.
Yeah, that is R&B though.
It is.
Yes. Okay, so we will be back soon with another episode, maybe with the review of the Love album. I think we have to do that. We have to do like a live reaction to that album because it's being hyped as the greatest R&B album of all time. So we got to do that. So maybe we'll be back soon.
We'll be there. I will have thoughts.
We will be there. So anyways, we are out of here. You guys take care, be safe, and we'll do this again soon. Peace.
All right.
See ya.